Whereas this, like, you will give your DM a serious drinking problem up till 17th level, and then this just kind of makes it a little worse.
Right, and then you go, well, I guess I'm done playing. We're going to find
a new game system. To a different game. Yeah. Who wants to play Warhammer 40K?
Right, something less aggravating like Magic the Gathering.
Welcome to Monsters and Monster Class, your Dungeons & Dragons fix. I'm Kevin Odie.
I'm Jared Bornigal.
And I'm Will Meldon.
And we'll be hanging out with you for a while to talk about anything and everything D&D related. On this episode, we are taking a look at the new cleric subclass, the Twilight Domain, added in Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. So let's dive into it.
Please. I am really excited for this one. In the same vein as we had the Peace Domain last week, it's another cleric class that I think was... I guess I don't know what the heck happened here. So Twilight Domain is a... it's like the Light Domain in the sense that, yeah, they like light, but it's a little bit dimmer. You know, Twilight. And it's all about...
That's the official flavor text.
That's the official flavor text.
Like, light, but just when the dimmer down, like 25%.
Yeah.
Not off. Just down.
So it's all about the transitional aspects between light and dark and making the dark seem like a less scary place. So that actually, I do like the flavor, and they didn't just go for like a shadow cleric, which is cool because it seems like everything already has a shadow theme to it. And really, there's only so much variation you get out of light. You know, light, dark, this is the in-between. but I do like in the flavor text, it says that clerics who serve these deities bring comfort to those who seek rest and protect them by venturing into the encroaching darkness to ensure the dark is a comfort, not a terror. So this is the cleric for all children afraid of the dark.
Mm-hmm. And adults. I could use one of these in my life.
any just initial thoughts on the flavor from you guys? Is this like fitting a niche you've always been looking for?
Yes, you nailed it. I was always thinking about this. No, it's just, it's pretty good. I think they got this one right.
Yeah, like this is not something I've been wanting, but it's, yeah, I never even considered it, but it's fine. I think it could run into the issue a little bit of, you'd have to get kind of abstract with that concept to apply it to most adventuring parties, I think, because a lot of it is not dealing with the night and the terrors of the night.
Sure.
You know, you need to go rid the goblins in the camp, you know, out of town. That's not really the domain of a Twilight cleric.
Yeah, I guess
you know, but like I think you just kind of get more abstract with the concept of Twilight and the terrors of darkness, and
yeah,
you can make it work.
I think my current issue, and I do mean this as in my issue, is I don't really know any of the gods associated with this concept. So to me, it is a little bit odd. Like, what are the terrors of the night? They don't really give any examples just right off the rip here. Does that mean vampires? Kind of, maybe. I don't know. Those I associate with night. Werewolves I associate with night. But it's not about monsters specifically. It's the horrors of the night. So I would almost say from that aspect, I find the flavor, just again, with what's in here, I'm not going into the gods of Eberron and Faerun and all these places. That flavor alone is a little bit weak to me, because it just doesn't, it doesn't have a clear-cut idea of what I'm supposed to be protecting. But
Yeah, overall, I'd say it's pretty light on the flavor.
Yeah, which, I mean, isn't always a bad thing, and I'm sure people have already come up with great ideas for a character. I will say that any and all discussion about this class, though, seems to fall to the mechanics, as that's, well, that's what us nerds like talking about. So, taking a look to start at their domain spells, clerics, as a reminder, they get different spells at their respective levels, and all of those are always prepared, which is kind of the important part. They're preparation casters, so these are the ones that they have no matter what. Starting at first level, we get really opposite sides of the spectrum. Fairy Fire, which is probably up there in my like top five, maybe top 10 first level spells, which allows you to get an area, can see all things invisible, and have advantage on attacks against that creature.
Mm-hmm. And incredibly fitting, because anything that fails that save gets covered and like outlined in light.
Yeah, but like so not incredibly too bright for a... of light. Just like little dim light. That is not in the text. No. That is not okay. In the spell flavor. That's...
Actually, no, it sheds dim light in a 10-foot radius.
Oh, shit. Okay. Yeah. Never mind. This is pretty bright. This is probably the most fitting spell for Twilight Cleric.
Yeah.
Sleep, I think everybody knows that it's really great at low levels, but then around the level 4 or 5 area, it starts to become basically worthless, as you may be able to sleep somebody who's at low HP, maybe, mm-hmm. but otherwise, you could probably just kill them.
Right, yeah, how that's the sleep spell works. It's just it's another area effect, 20-foot radius, I think. Creatures within 20 feet of your point, yeah. And then you roll 5d8, and then you start subtracting hit points from there. So, and low levels, you're going to hit a lot. So, like, if you rolled, like, a 30, and you have 3 goblins with 10 HP, all of them are going to go to sleep. But then if you do it higher and you have a bugbear that has 30 HP, that one will fall asleep and nothing else. And if you have a bugbear that has 35 HP, nothing's going to fall asleep.
Right.
Oh, no, it's lowest current hit points. I'm sorry. I did that opposite.
Yeah, it does do. Yeah,
It really does start to go away.
Right. The only time where I see that getting used at higher levels is if you need to take somebody alive. It's a really good option because there's no save against it. So if you know that they're getting weak, which you might not, depends on your table, how much info your DM wants to give. But you know, if you're asking, I'm waiting for them to look haggard. Great. Let's go ahead and do sleep. Maybe you even upcast it because you're really trying to get this one person to fall asleep and be out of the fight, but not kill them. Okay, great. It has some use there. But the amount of times that has come up in our game, is the answer is never. I don't think anyone's like tried it, but I don't know. It's situational.
Mm-hmm.
At third level, they get Moonbeam, which is normally a druid spell. Don't believe it's on any other lists. Oath of the Ancients, Oath of the Watcher. So yeah, mainly a druid spell. And that one is great. I like Moonbeam a whole bunch. It takes an action to cast, but then you can control it every single turn. Creature makes a constitution saving throw or takes 2d10 radiant damage on a failed save, half as much on a success. Shape changers make the save with disadvantage. So, okay, here's some direction for the Twilight domain. Maybe they don't like shapeshifters, which werewolves do fall under. So that's something. Will, you're given the look. You're given the that's a stretch look.
That's an oddly specific thing to be prejudiced against.
Just werewolves.
And it's not because, you know, of their nature. It's because they change shape.
In the night. They're the horrors of the night. And I mean, besides the fact they can change it like any time. That's totally a thing in 5e. They
could just werewolves.
Yeah. but in general, pretty good spell. It is concentration, and I feel like in later levels, clerics are going to have more important things and better things to concentrate on.
Mm-hmm.
But
and it's an action every turn to like move it in.
Right. Right.
Use it again.
Only thing that sounds nice is you can have, not in the same turn, you can't get them both up, but you could have Moonbeam and Spiritual Weapon out. So if you're like trying to stay really far back and not get into the fray at all, you have ways to do some pretty consistent damage.
Right. Or if you could lock people down in the space somehow. Because it's an action to remove it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because then if somebody enters the space for the first time of the turn and starts to turn there, that's when they take the damage. So if you could somehow pin someone down in it.
Yeah,
but it's only a 5-foot radius. So I guess it covers 10 feet.
Is it
we've been doing that wrong.
It
we've always done it as it just covers like one square on the battle map. It's a shines on a 5-foot radius.
That is a lot bigger.
Yeah, now, so it's four squares. But
it would be really, 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 really nice if this allowed you to be like creatures you choose, so it's not just everybody. Because then you could definitely do some nice combos there where somebody grapples somebody or, you know, knocks them prone, whatever, grapples them, keeps them right there, and then just let the Moonbeam do the rest of the work. I'm sure you can think of some ways to do that.
Yeah. I mean, you could hold them the outside of it.
Right.
Because that's kind of how it works. Like, their hands being in it are sure. It's just not a part of D&D 5e's rules, so.
Yeah, that sounds really, really dark. I don't know why. Just like,
just like hold, just like holding them up by the shirt collar, cooking them in the moonbeam.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
But like, you
as
know,
you punching them, or right. You knee them on your turn, right. Just in the gut over and over. Yeah.
And it's
yeah,
like,
okay.
It's not like we're not killing these things, so like, it's dark regardless, but.
I was going to say, yeah.
Next, they get see invisibility, which lets them see invisible creatures.
Crazy.
I do like pretty when these ones, they're situational, but I like when they're always prepared, because it's the type of spell that I'm never going to want to prepare, but if the situation comes up, great, I've got it.
That's a very good point, yeah. Yeah, it's a very good spell for this type of list.
Then up to fifth level, we get Aura of Vitality, one that was recently added to the cleric list in Tasha's, originally just a paladin spell. And Liaman's Tiny Hut. So Aura of Vitality, I think we talked about in the Peace domain or the Order domain. We've kind of talked about it in regards to clerics as a whole. I don't think it changes with Twilight domain. It's pretty darn good. Bonus action, cause one creature in the aura, could be you, to regain 2d6 HP. Great.
Great. Yeah, for a minute. Every turn for a minute you could do that.
Yeah,
so it could be a lot of healing. Yeah, it's I think we mentioned before, so it was surprising clerics didn't have this,
right?
And now they do, and now this one always has it prepared. You'll get used out of it.
Yeah. Then Liaman's Tiny Hut, that's a bad spell, right? Nobody likes that.
DMs hate it because it allows safe rest at night. It's, you kind of create this like impassable little dome that people sleep in, and it's temperature controlled and things like that. It lasts for 8 hours. Perfect for the flavor of this class, to give people comfort in the night and not see it as fear. It would be a disgrace if they did not get this spell. It really would.
The thing that's kind of interesting to think about is usually this is really, really, really good for wizards because it is a ritual spell. Clerics don't have ritual casting, though, if I remember correctly. It's like, when was the last time that came up, right?
I was going to say, yeah. All right, quick pause. They have ritual casting.
They do have ritual casting.
Yep.
Okay.
Great. Cleric spell and as a ritual tag, and these count as cleric spells for them, right? Yeah. The domain spells. Yep. Yeah. Yep, so they could ritual cast it.
Okay, then that is really, really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's bards. Bards are the one that fall outside of that because they get access to it, but they do not have ritual casting. But that's fine. You don't have to also look up bards. Yeah, that's not the point of this episode. But if we're wrong, somebody in the comments will let us know. Thanks, comments. This is definitely a spell, though, that always great to have as a player. As a DM, I think it really is the bane of like early DM's existences. I don't get as annoyed with it now. There's bigger fish to fry, in my opinion. You want your safe rest? Okay, that's fine. If I really need to, you know, take a page out of the jerk book, there's ways that I can deal with Liaman's Tiny Hut.
Right.
Now, I forget. I know that it is opaque from the outside, transparent from the inside. So they can see the dome. I mean, like, unless you sit there and try and, you know, cover it and everything, somebody walking by can say, oh, look, there's a dome there. That's probably the adventurers in the middle of the woods I'm looking for. I'm going to wait here and kill them in the morning. All right, great. Right. Or cast Dispel Magic on it. Okay.
Right.
So.
Yeah, there's ways.
Then we get Aura of Life at 7th level here. So these are 4th level spells. This one, I think we also talked about in the earlier cleric episodes, but this is life-preserving energy radiates from you in an aura with a 30-foot radius. Until the spell ends, the aura moves with you, centered on you. Each non-hostile creature in the area, including you, has resistance to necrotic damage. Hit point max can't be reduced. In addition, a non-hostile living creature regains 1 HP when it starts its turn in the aura with 0 HP. Okay, so this is a really good anti-vampire spell. I am like, I'm thinking I hit the mark on this.
Sure. You know, yeah, this is another one where it's good to always have prepared, like just as a free thing, because it's really, really situational.
Agreed.
I think it'd be pretty rare you'd want to spend a fourth level spell slot and your concentration on this. The immunity to, or resistance to necrotic damage.
Yeah.
And can't have hit point maximum reduces. Yeah, like vampires.
Vampires. I can't think of any other reason I would have this.
Right.
I mean, that's a really broad statement, but
yeah.
There's only a couple other reasons why you'd have this. Now, most of the time that necrotic damage does come up, a lot of times necrotic damage comes up, we're also talking about hit point max reduction. So I'm sure there are other monsters and stuff that this comes up with.
For sure. A lot of horror type monsters.
Right.
Spooky things in the night. Yeah.
Spooky things in the night.
That's fitting for that. The if you're at zero, you get one HP if you're in the aura is nice in certain situations. I think a lot of times it would probably be better if a bonus action healing word them. But if you have multiple people who are down, get this aura up. They could at least have a chance.
Yep. Then we have greater invisibility. You or a creature you touch become invisible just forever, and it never ends. Kevin, talk about this one. How do you feel about greater invisibility?
I love greater invisibility. I just got it on my Bard Rogue multiclass fourth level spell. It's concentration for a minute. And yeah, it turns you invisible, but it doesn't break if you attack or cast spells or do anything. It's been fantastic for me in my playstyle of kind of weaving in and out of combat and stuff like that and give myself advantage on every attack to then trigger sneak attack. On a cleric, a little less useful because it is a concentration slot.
Right, but it doesn't have to be on you. It's on whoever you touch.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm a selfish person, so I always cast on myself. But that's a really good point, yeah.
Actually, that would be, not that you have to do this, but sorry, this is like talking about our game stuff now. But we have another rogue, and as her sneak attack gets better, it might actually be good to use your greater invisibility on her instead of yourself.
Nah.
No, okay.
No, that doesn't make sense. Then my concentration saves aren't great.
Right.
And like, that's a benefit. I'm then invisible and not getting targeted much.
Guess you'll have to take Warcaster too.
Damn it. Feetax.
But yeah, greater invisibility.
Great spell to have. Always a good buff option.
Fitting flavor.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Clerics normally get it? No. No, they do not. So, yeah.
A lot does, but yeah, not them.
All right. Then next we have Circle of Power. And this is at 9th level, so 5th level spells. And this one I've heard quite a lot of buzz about, as this was a paladin-only spell. And now it is on... This is the first other class it gets added to. I think Oath of the Crown had it by default. But usually we're talking about a 17th level paladin spell.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking about a 9th level cleric spell. That's a lot more obtainable.
Right.
So I'm sure many people don't know this because I feel like the paladin spells are kind of a blind spot because all you do is smite. Nobody cares about the spells.
And you don't get to 17th level. Also, just to fill in the full conversation, bards can pick this too with magical secrets at 10th.
That is fair. So 5th level, casting time of 1 action, concentration and duration of 10 minutes. So divine energy radiates from you, distorting and diffusing magical energy within 30 feet of you. Until the spell ends, the sphere moves with you, centered on you. So it's an aura. For the duration, each friendly creature in the area, including you, has advantage on saving throws against spells and other magical effects. Beautiful, but there's more. Additionally, when an affected creature succeeds on a saving throw made against a spell or magical effect that allows it to make a saving throw to take only half damage, it instead takes no damage if it succeeds on the saving throw.
That's a fantastic spell.
Yeah.
That'd be hard to pass up if there's a caster present. And it's, magical effects too, so even like, I know we run into that a lot. I think it was maybe Abjuration Wizard, where it's like they have advantage and stuff on spells specifically,
right,
but not magical effects. And a lot of monsters have magical effects that technically aren't spells, and so it actually didn't come up a whole lot.
In
a campaign I ran a couple years back,
we ran into this as well, even in the dragon fight that we just got out of. where there's a lot of times where it's not really clear if something's a magical effect. I almost wish there was a little key system that said, like, oh, if there's this little asterisk here or this little symbol, that denotes a magical effect. Because my common sense dictates that a dragon's fire breath isn't a magical effect. It's fire that they are creating. But their frightful presence, is that magical? Probably not. But
yeah, I think that's just them being scary.
Right. But it's a thing that at the table, but no, it brings up a question. There's no clear answer. But regardless, Circle of Power, great.
Yeah, absolutely. That kind of makes some of the other concentration stuff feel a little obsolete, except for very specific situations.
Yeah. Now my...
Though it is a fifth level spell, so that's there's your limit. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's higher.
Not sure exactly how it relates to the Twilight. I guess just that protection idea. It is trying to be a protection or cleric, not paladin.
Right.
I was going with the alliteration. It caught me. And then last fifth level spell and last spell in general is Mislead, which I don't actually know what this does. I've never seen Mislead before. It's on the Bard, Wizard, and now the Twilight Domain spell list, but it is part of the basic rules, so I don't know how this has never come up before.
Yeah, I don't know. It's never one I've wanted to pick. You know, I've played a handful of Bards. But well, yeah, you become invisible, and then there's a double appears where you're standing, and it lasts for the duration. But the invisibility does end if you attack or cast a spell. I'm basically just reading at this point.
Yeah, that's fine. Please
You can use your action to move your illusionary double up to twice your speed and make its gesture speak and behave in whatever way you choose. You can see through its eyes and hear through its ears as if you were located where it is. On each of your turns as a bonus action, you could switch from using its senses to using your own or back again. While you're using senses, you're blind and deaf in regards to your own surrounding. That's the whole spell. No, it's definitely not a combat thing.
Yeah, it seems a little it's a high pretty level weird for what it is. Like, I don't put this as a fifth level spell.
Yeah. You can definitely get creative with it. You know, it's an hour, and I don't think there's a limit.
No. Wait, what do you mean a limit?
Like, in terms of how far it could be away from you.
No, I guess not. So it's kind of like a really specific major image.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of this can be accomplished with major image, but this lets you see through its eyes and hear through its ears. So it definitely is a, as you said, probably an out of combat one where you're going to negotiations and you send your your mislead mirror image thing instead of yourself so that you can not be in any danger.
Right. Or, I know you're not a huge Star Wars fan, Jared, but the thing that comes to mind is...
other people like Star Wars. You're allowed to talk about it.
I'm actually completely blanking on which one is this. It's in the new trilogy where, I guess spoilers here, but Maluk dies and he like sends himself in, like force projecting. This is years old at this point. Force projects himself onto this battlefield, and so he's completely untouchable. He's not actually there, and he uses that to intimidate the shit out of people and as a distraction and things like that. And then he dies because it was too hard, but...
Oh, what? So then why didn't he just go in the first place?
He was really far away.
Yeah, the commute was just terrible. I
don't know, man. It was.
Don't they have faster than light travel?
Last Jedi, I think. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Sorry. I'm not about to sit here and start critiquing Star Wars.
Yeah, if you haven't watched the movie,
Now, this, I guess, what would be the initial range? Because it appears where you are standing. Okay,
yeah,
so
where you're standing.
That is important. You couldn't just like have it appear on the other side of the world. Now, that would be cool as like a really extended message or scrying ability, but that, pretty strong.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Flavor-wise, for Twilight Cleric, any overlap?
Pretty weird. I don't quite get it.
The
word invisible is in there.
Maybe it's kind of Twilight Zone-y, you know?
Yeah, sure.
At least in the same vibe of, like, things being weird. Yeah, the Twilight.
I guess it's a weird thing to do, but it's not that weird.
It's not that weird.
It's actually pretty normal.
Well, then I got nothing.
Yeah, I don't know.
Now, let's go ahead and move on into some of the class features beyond the spells here. Starting off at first level, we get some bonus proficiencies, and they get proficiency with martial weapons and heavy armor. So heavy armor is not new. I think all martial weapons is, it's not that common for clerics. There might be one or two others.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty big. Get a great sword, great axe, that sort of stuff. Go two-handed.
Yeah, I know Tempest Domain.
I mean, you can get a longbow. I mean,
longbow's good. I mean, you have options.
No, I don't. Yeah, but you, they also have good cantrips, so.
And that's where it falls apart. Because right. Why not just Toll the Dead instead?
Yeah.
This is like my biggest
because,
issue.
Yeah, they don't get extra attack. Yeah, if they get extra attack, then, you know, it starts keeping up and there's other benefits, but yeah.
Right. Now, on the bright side, your Divine Strikes could be long-ranged as well. So, like, that works with your arrows. It doesn't have to be a melee attack. So, if you are shooting somebody, it does honestly compete with cantrips damage-wise and has the potential to crit, which a lot of cantrips do not have the potential for. And you can get magic weapons or items and everything that might enhance the attack as well. So it gives you options.
Sure, yeah. You know, with the heavy armor, you're running some weirdness with balancing dex and strength, if you want the...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Ranged route. I think it'd be better to just do this in melee. Just lean into that. Wear your heavy armor. Be the cleric with greatsword and be cool as shit. And then once you hit eighth, your hits do 2d6 plus 1d8 plus 5 or 4 or whatever.
Yeah, I'm with you. Not bad. That's pretty cool. Get yourself the Great Weapon Master and really lean into it.
Ooh, yeah. Just the all or nothing cleric.
Yeah.
Just one hit. If it hits, fucking devastating. Otherwise,
now
basically you're just a strength rogue at that point.
We kind of had this, well, at least this style of play with Saucy. That was Will's Forge Cleric, as I believe they also get martial and heavy armor. About to check that on the martial.
They just get heavy armor.
They just get heavy armor. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you think that having more weapons would have changed up your playstyle?
Especially for Saucy, which was the, like, tin can, the cast spells. The goal was just to not get hit. So shield was mandatory. And, you know, it doesn't matter. You've got the best weapon you've got available, the mace, without martial weapon proficiencies.
Right.
Right. Good. Yeah. All clerics get all simple weapons.
And I think that's why it doesn't really matter. I think a shield will serve you better than a greatsword 9 times out of 10 as a cleric.
Yeah. And sure. I think you definitely run into some issues where you're casting spells, especially once you get to higher levels. You have so many spell slots that you are casting a spell almost every single turn. And you want to hold concentration on it. And the best way to hold concentration is to not be up in the fray. So if you have an action available, it's safer, usually, to cast a cantrip from a distance. But that said, that doesn't get rid of this as a playstyle. It might not be working out as well every single time, but you have the option to play this way.
Right.
You might just be picking more spells that aren't concentration and kind of doing quick buffs that you throw out here and there. Maybe relying on those auras more, which are concentration and, I don't know, you might need Warcaster. You're going to need Warcaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you're going to need strength, you're going to need wisdom, and you're going to need constitution. It's hard to get them all to a good spot. All right, so then next up we have Eyes of Night, another first level feature. You can see through the deepest gloom. You have dark vision out to a range of 300 feet. In that radius, you can see in dim light as if it were bright light, and in darkness as if it were dim light. As an action, you can magically share the dark vision of this feature with willing creatures you can see within 10 feet of you, up to a number of creatures equal to your wisdom modifier. The shared dark vision lasts for 1 hour, and once you do this, you can't do it again until you finish a long rest, unless you expend a spell slot of any level to share it again.
I say 300-foot dark vision's awesome. Yeah, that's just useful. Good thing for them to have, very fitting. And just to clarify, this does not work on magical darkness. It does not say that anywhere. So, which is, I think it would be fitting for them to be able to see through magical darkness, but I understand it being too strong and why they didn't do it.
Right.
The sharing it seems kind of superfluous. Like for an hour, it's like if you could share it for 8 hours, sure, you know, give a boost to the members of a party who don't have dark vision. But just for 1 hour, or you have to start casting spells, I don't know.
I guess I kind of like that. I like it being a little bit limited, only because you're going to save this for when it feels important. Say you're just walking around a cave, you might not say, this is the time that we need to spend it. But a fight's about to begin, you know, you're starting to hear creepy noises from up ahead or whatever. It's like, okay, I need to make sure that everybody can see whatever is attacking us. Let me go ahead and expend that. So it, I guess my bigger issue is with dark vision as a whole, and the fact that once everything has dark vision, which most races do just get dark vision by default, it starts to be less interesting to use it in general. And I know people throw out stuff like, oh, we'll have things that rely on color so that dark vision matters more because you only see as black and white in dark vision. You can't make out color. And whatever other challenge you can think of that makes dark vision not as hand wavy as it is right now. But honestly, I find it a little tedious, no matter what. If people can see, they can see. If they can't see, light a torch and let's move on with our lives.
Right. There's something to be said about 300 feet worth of it, though, because you now have the best vision in the game.
Yeah. I will definitely give you that. 300 feet is pretty ridiculous.
Fucking insane, to be honest. It's just ridiculous. Like, you are now hunting drow and the creatures of the Underdark, because they can't see you, despite having evolved under the crust of the earth.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, 300 feet's far.
So, yeah, I say, I think it's a good feature. I like the limitation on it. Again, my only issue, it just becomes a complaint about dark vision as a whole, but it's all right. And it is a lot at first level, and we're not done, because it gets another first level feature. You think this will be good for a multi-class dip, maybe?
Maybe.
Vigilant Blessing. The knight has taught you to be vigilant. As an action, you give one creature you touch, including possibly yourself, advantage on the next initiative roll the creature makes. This benefit ends immediately after the roll, or if you use this feature again. So, giving somebody advantage on initiative rolls all the time.
Great. I mean, there's a good handful of other subclasses that have the feature where you just get advantage on initiative roll. This is this, but also can be shared if needed.
Right.
I don't think it's that crazy.
No.
I feel like you're gearing up to say you think it might be really strong, but like I said, there's a lot of different ways to get advantage on initiative roll in other classes that do also just get it. The bonus, just being able to share, it's obviously a bit stronger, but it's you or someone else, it's not both.
Yeah. Combos extremely well with the Gloomstalker, the rogue subclass. Sorry, ranger subclass, misspoke there. Mm-hmm. Because I was leading up to, if you had a Gloomstalker assassin rogue multi-class, and you also had a Twilight Domain cleric in your party, then this would get really annoying. That's it. Just that really specific build that I feel like somebody will chase. Not all three. Right. Don't put all three in one. That's possible, though. You could do a three multi-class.
Oh, yeah.
One Twilight Domain.
Dex and Wisdom, yeah.
Then go into your Assassin Rogue to get the automatic crits if something hasn't taken its... No, it's advantage on creatures that haven't gone yet, or if they're surprised, it's an automatic crit.
Right.
And then Gloomstalker for the Wisdom to your initiative... And then this for advantage on your initiative roll. So just mash that all into one. Once you're level like 12, you're just going to be really annoying.
Right.
Now, the only other thing I'll say is, once again, that question of role-playing wise, where does this fit? Where does this fit in the flavor of the class?
You're vigilant. I mean, that's in the name. Vigilant Blessing.
Okay.
Yeah, you're vigilant in the night. You're the night watch. I mean,
sure, but it doesn't say you can do this at night.
No, because that would be really, really
that would fix this entire subclass.
Yes,
you all of this only works at night.
All right.
So yeah, so right away, level one, the three different abilities. Each individually is nothing crazy. The proficiency of martial weapons and heavy armor. A lot of clerics do just get that, or the crazy big dark vision that could be shared, great but not breaking, and then the vigilant blessing with the advantage on initiative that could also be shared. Again, other classes and subclasses get stuff like that, but all three at level one is pretty solid.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, a cleric's always been is usually a pretty good one level dip, just because
right they get it right away.
Right,
your subclass.
This is pretty powerful in that regard.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. I'm not complaining about it. I don't think it's like, it's not a game-breaking level one dip. It's just, it's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
So, next, they get their channel divinity at second level. This is Twilight Sanctuary. So you can use your channel divinity to refresh your allies with soothing twilight. As an action, you present your holy symbol and a sphere of twilight emanates from you. The sphere is centered on you, has a 30-foot radius, and is filled with dim light. The sphere moves with you, and it lasts for 1 minute or until you are incapacitated or die. Whenever a creature, including you, ends its turn in the sphere, you can grant that creature one of these benefits. You grant it temporary HP equal to 1d6 plus your cleric level, or you end one effect on it, causing it to be charmed or frightened.
So that's a very solid channel divinity. The charmed or frightened situational doesn't come up a bunch, but really nice when it does. But it being able to give your entire party 1d6 plus your cleric level and 10 hit points every single turn. Because it just doesn't use your reaction or bonus action to do that, right? Once it's up. Yeah.
No, that's really, really powerful. I mean, that is negating a ton of damage. Even once you're at level, let's just go ahead and say 10. This could be anywhere from 11 to 16, average of 14-ish HP, temp HP added every single turn. If you've got...
To every
party member. Yeah, to every party member. I mean, you're talking about upwards of 50 HP or damage that you're negating every round, potentially.
Yeah. Only limit in it, it's when you end your turn in the sphere. Not when you enter it for the first time, so you can't just run through it and get it or something. But 30-foot radius is pretty big. It's a 60-foot diameter sphere. I mean, that's a big chunk of the battlefield.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing that I see of this being a problem is every single person having to roll a d6 at the end of their turn. Sounds really annoying.
Heaven forbid. Also, I forgot to get my game-breaking amount of temp HP that round. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised they went with the cleric level instead of proficiency or wisdom. I just, 1d6 is enough, and I'd be like, okay, yeah, that's pretty good. But okay, we want to add a bonus to it. Sure, fine. Looking at the, is it the artificer? Artillerist that gets its little buddy that can
the
do
cannon thing. Yeah,
the little cannon that can make that can give temp HP. That one was like 1d10 plus something. I hate when I do this. So I bring up, oh, do you have it up?
Positive energy, it grants itself and creatures of your choice within 10 feet of it. That's it, just 10 feet, not 30 feet of it. Number of hit points equal to 1d8 plus your intelligence modifier. Yeah, and this takes your bonus action.
Yeah, that's like so much more mild in comparison. And this, you get one of them per short rest. At higher levels, clerics get two channel divinities starting at sixth level. They get two per short rest. That's a lot. That's going to be more or less every combat. So per day, this is adding an absurd amount of temp HP.
Yes, and just a quick clarification, every time you get new temp HP, it replaces the old, it does not stack.
Right.
Usually I see them call that out specifically anytime an ability like this has come up, but I'm not seeing it here. But it's just something to keep in mind. You don't keep adding to your temp HP if it did not get used up. You just replace it.
That would make it even more hilarious.
Just do it before just a fight.
Additive.
Yeah.
Everyone just stands there and just like...
Yep. Like, oh yeah, we're going into this fight with an extra 200 HP, everybody.
Right.
And
you know what's even more hilarious, though? Combining this with small-scale summon spells, where you summon a bunch of shitty creatures. Because there's no limits here. You summon 10 giant centipedes with your druid spell. They're now like quadruple their challenge rating.
Yeah, and
that's amazing. Yeah.
So this doesn't stack. I saw somebody just from some research I was doing online, somebody mentioning the shepherd druid in combination with this, because I believe they get, I think anything that comes out there, Mighty Summoner at 6th level, the creature appears with more hit points than normal, 2 extra HP per hit die it has. So, I mean, if you just want to make your 10 centipedes even stronger, just having 2 of these on the field would be ridiculous.
Right.
And that's actually where the problem is. This, in isolation,
in a vacuum, yeah.
Ridiculously good.
Right.
This combined with some other cheeky player's idea is, your game is just not going to work.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and once you get to higher levels, I think this is so, so absurd. Damage scales, sure, but you don't get to the point that you're doing, I don't know, 50 damage per turn easily. Like, if you're at, let's say, level 12. All right, so your players are now getting 15-ish temp HP every single turn. Even if I'm doing 30 damage, it would be the equivalent of having resistance to all damage all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything. Not even types of damage. Just like, there you go. Here's resistance.
Right.
Come on. Like, how did this get past playtesting? I know once we talk about level 17 through 20, you stop really caring about balance, but same deal. We're talking
level
about...
Level 2.
No.
You get this at level 2.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm saying, like, once we are at that point where it's like, okay, I get 20 temp HP every single turn at those higher levels. Like, that is mind-blowing. That's so goddamn much. The only way that DM can really get around this is being a dick back. Dispel magic. Oh, you've got another? Dispel magic again. Another? Dispel magic again. Please stop. Using this.
Yeah, big AoEs.
Right.
Just to wipe it all out. Things like that. But no, it's pretty rough. It's going to give the DM a very hard time.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's a good thing that that's where things stop, right? Like, this no longer gets any more powerful, and that's just like... the peak of this class's abilities. So let me just read this 6th level ability for the first time. You can draw on the mystical power of night to rise into the air. Huh. Okay. As a bonus action, when you are in dim or darkness, dim light or darkness, you can magically give yourself a flying speed equal... A flying speed equal to your walking speed for 1 minute. Motherfucker.
Surely you can't do this more than once per long rest, though, right, Jared?
Let's see. You can use this bonus action a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus? Regain all expended uses on a long rest?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. So, at least you can only do it on yourself. It's not everybody in your aura.
So, to start it, you need to be in dim light or darkness. Can you then leave that and still have it?
Yes.
I intended to look that up.
I tried to at least as my rules lawyer brain has determined, yes, because it says when you are in dim light or darkness, you can give yourself a flying speed equal to your walking speed. I guess.
A minute. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
It's a little weird, but... I don't dislike flying speed as much as you guys do, because you have built-in races that literally get it from level 1. There is uncommon magic items that have flying speeds on them. I don't think it's that absurd, but it does feel strong with this class to really keep them out of harm's way with their big concentration and, you know, do the channel divinity and Same turn, channel divinity, bonus action to fly, pop up 20 feet in the air to get out of melee range of everything, but yeah, your entire party can still just be below you in your 30-foot radius sphere of temp HP.
Yeah.
With your heavy armor. Yeah.
And there's...
Also, it's not even concentration.
No.
It's like you can still then pop up a concentration spell, another big 30-foot aura, and just hang out up there, making your party great as you throw Toll of the Dead down on people.
Yep. And
does anybody remember the Tempest's capstone?
No, actually.
No.
But I have the...
If you're like outdoors, you can give yourself a flying speed equal to your walking speed.
Oh.
Like forever, like unlimitedly.
Whenever you're not underground or indoors.
The lack of
17th capstone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a capstone. This is not limited in a way that makes it sufficiently worse.
I would argue it's better.
Yes.
Dim light can be hard to, like...
Oh, yeah?
Shadow of a tree is not dim light.
Well, you know what gives you dim light? Their channel divinity.
Are you kidding me? Oh, my God, you're right.
An aura centered on you casts dim light. So dim light,
yeah, 30-foot radius and filled with dim light.
Not too hard to get it.
Fuck, yeah, you're right. Okay.
Sorry, didn't mean to make that so much a dunk on you, but...
No. That's good. I was trying to think, like, people might be thinking, like, oh, if there's, like, a shadow in daylight, it's like, oh, that's dim light. It's like, no, dim light imposes disadvantage on perception checks and right. stuff. Like, dim light's pretty substantial.
Right.
And darkness is opaque. You cannot see.
So, but, I don't know if there's any other, like, really tame spells that give dim light. I'm sure there's, like, one or two things that, like, radiate dim light in some way, but... I'm sure
some warlock AoEs do, but you don't want to be in those anyways,
right? And I'm sure if you have dim light, like I think a torch is like bright light for 10 or 20 feet and then dim light 20 feet out. I'm sure if you're out in the daylight and you light a torch, your DM's not going to be like, oh, well, 20 feet away, that's dim light now. It's like, no. It's all bright light. The sun usurps the torch. but the darkness spell, yeah, but you can't see through magical darkness.
But, yeah, it doesn't matter. You just activate it and then fly out.
Yeah, I think that needs to be clarified. So I'll turn that over to listeners. If you know or have done some more research into whether or not you still maintain that flying speed after leaving the dim light or darkness, then let us know. I feel like they should have called that out. An extra sentence just for the clarification would have been appreciated. And there's definitely precedent as to say, like, once you leave this area, it goes away. So. Yeah. Great. Well, I'm sure that everything stops there and it doesn't get any stronger.
Don't we all know what's coming next?
Yeah. So 8th level, this one is pretty obvious. Divine Strike. You gain the ability to infuse your weapons with divine energy. Once on each of your turns, when you hit a creature with a weapon attack, you can cause the attack to deal an extra 1d8 radiant damage. And at 14th level, the extra damage increases to 2d8. So,
yeah, all clerics either get this or the spellcasting variant of it.
Or in Tasha's now, either, because... It just doesn't increase at 14th level.
Right.
You're locked to the 1d8.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing else to say about this.
I'm surprised they didn't like make this arbitrarily higher just to fuck with you.
How about this? The only thing I'll say is that radiant damage, it feels uninspired.
They should have been doing twilight damage.
They get their own new damage type that absolutely nothing is resistant to.
So this would have made it stronger, so I'm glad they didn't do it, but I would have maybe been okay with radiant or necrotic.
You think? I think radiant fits.
I don't know.
They're protecting against necrotic.
But like, I don't know. Something feels weird about with the radiant aspect, I guess. But just because light clerics get radiant, and it's like, yeah, that makes sense. They're light. And this is saying, well, what if it was a little bit less light? And we're saying, yeah, okay, I guess that's still radiant, and same amount of damage, and whatever else. So maybe it should be 1d6. That's my fix to this class.
Yeah, So as we talked about at the beginning here, we were talking about their martial weapons and like longbows and how does it compare to cantrips. So this is one that comes on where they get the D8 and then at 14th, 2D8. So like doing like 2D8 plus 4 or 5, whatever, damage on an attack is comparable to cantrips. At 11th, 12th, and 13th, cantrips pull ahead again. Then at 14th, this catches back up with the 2D8. So it's a little weird like that, but...
Yeah, and Toll the Dead just throws all of it out the window.
I know, 2D12 versus 2D8 plus 5. Not really.
Assuming you have plus 5, which is...
Sure, plus 3, plus 4, plus 5. Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah, and the ability to crit, which can't be discounted. Yeah. That is important. All right, and last is Twilight Shroud. So this is their 17th level capstone. The Twilight that you summon offers a protective embrace. You and your allies have half cover while in the sphere created by your Twilight Sanctuary. So plus 2 to everyone's AC and plus 2 to dexterity saving throws.
Yep, and then all the crazy...
Oh, and the temp HP.
There's the word. I was blanking on that word.
Yeah.
Yeah, the temp HP. Also, this is probably minor, but I'm sure rogues would also love this because the dim light is going to give disadvantage on perception checks to perceive them if they are hiding.
Yeah.
In it.
This combos very well like with that. Rogues.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it's... All right, for 17th level, it's not that insane. Plus right. 2 AC is really, really nice. But again, we kind of talk about this a lot. Once we get to like 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th level, we're kind of... like everything's kind of broken. Your 9th level spells are on the table. The campaign's coming to an end. You're facing world-ending threats with bigger stakes than just you personally dying.
And the plus to hits get pretty absurd. When you guys were just fighting an ancient green dragon, that had a plus 15 to hit. I don't think I think one attack missed the entire time. Because I rolled a natural one, but
right,
things are going to hit even at that level.
Right.
So
a nice little cherry on top. But this is actually, I don't think that absurd.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of absurd in the sense that like there are subclasses for cleric that suck all the way up to 17th level and then continue to suck. Whereas this, like, you will give your DM a serious drinking problem up till 17th level, and then this just kind of makes it a little worse.
Right, and then you go, well, I guess I'm done playing. We're just going to find a new game system.
A different game. Yeah. Who wants to play Warhammer 40K?
Right. Something less aggravating like Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my overall feelings on this are, why? Why did clerics get so much love in Tasha's? I don't get it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Order's solid, but also not new to Tasha's. We did screw that up.
Yes.
I don't think we owned our mistakes on video. We've done it on Twitter. But yeah, we kept saying, oh, it's new to Tasha's. Somehow we all missed it. It actually came out in
Ravnica.
I'm blanking again. Yeah, Ravnica. But we didn't talk about it anyway, so it was a new conversation for us, so still all good. But yeah, then Peace and now Twilight, like, kind of two broken subclasses.
Yeah, and I try to not use the word broken. I really do. Sure. It is extremely powerful. Twilight, I actually think is, I don't know how, I think it's more broken than Peace, though. Just because of how much this temp HP gives, It's absurd. It's just absurd.
It's game changing. This will fundamentally change.
I would say Peace is stronger.
I won't even have
the resistance on everything being able to pop around and take damage. That's gonna, I think, outpace the temp HP.
You're right. I forgot
that's
about
that. That's where you get two. You get a Peace Domain and a Twilight Cleric in a party.
Oh no.
The Peace Domain and Twilight Cleric is probably best for like a world ending NPC combo.
Yeah.
Right?
That you have to fight. That's what your party has to deal with.
Yeah.
We have found peace, and it is death. So, yeah, I look, sometimes, I don't know about you all, but sometimes I just wake up, and I just look at the trickery domain, just to, like, get a big sad first thing. And Just comparing it to, I mean, I don't know. Comparing trickery to any of these two is just laughable that it's even a thing, that it's even this much of a problem.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm just mad.
I think that's actually the tragedy of this, because we're like, oh, why did the cleric get so much love? These are so bad that I feel like they're almost unplayable. So if you wanted to play a new cleric, like, you can't do it without being the bad guy.
Right. Everyone's
strong, yeah.
Right. Like, you get to ruin it for the table. Like the Shepherd Druid, as I always say, like, if somebody brings that to the table, it's like, oh, thanks for bogging down combat worse than anything else you could have done.
Right.
Now,
and not even because that one's so strong, it's just
annoying.
Summoning all the time, yeah.
And it is strong, but it is also annoying. Where this one just pretty broken. So thanks, wizards, for that.
I'm saying clerics are already really good. Just like the base cleric and all of their spells are fantastic. They have so many good spells.
I don't get it.
Abilities and yeah.
Like, you could play a base cleric without any of the subclass abilities, and you would be fine. Compared to, like, a champion fighter, you'd be more useful in almost every situation. Just stop. Stop doing this. You know what I'll never stop doing? Never stop shilling for our affiliates. I don't know who I'm going to choose.
I don't know. I thought that was going to be smoother.
Nah.
Like, if you went for Metallic Dice Games, like, you know what I would never stop doing? Never stop buying my dice from Metallic Dice Games.
Maybe I could do that. Can I get a redo? Yeah. Can you leave all of this in, but we'll all just pretend that I'm doing this for the first time?
Sure.
But you know what I'd never stop doing? Never stop buying my dice from Metallic Dice Games. The dice provider
so smooth
of monsters and multi-class. And you, humble listener, can receive 10% off
provider.
Your what? The
when you say dice provider, it makes it sound like they like give us dice to play with.
They did.
Like, oh, did they?
Yeah.
They actually sent us dice?
Yes. Oh, I use them. I kept them, but
I don't blame you. They're really nice dice.
But yeah, they sent some blue ones and some... I should probably show those next time, now that we're on video. But you threw off my groove, so whatever. You, humble listener, can receive 10% off your order using the code MM10. And we receive a share of that. So helps out the show. You get some beautiful, beautiful dice and dice accessories, maybe, if you're feeling crazy. And we get an email in our inbox that says, hey, somebody's made a new order. And we go, wow, this is great. I'm so happy that we did this and the affiliate programs are cool. And that's it. Tell us your thoughts on the Twilight Domain, because it's a class. It's a class, and I'm sure a lot of people will have opinions on it. Let us know on Reddit. You can go to our Monsters and Multiclass YouTube. Just search Monsters. It's all, if you found us, you found us. So leave a comment.
Yeah, there'll be a thing on the screen at this point that lists.
Good. And then last thing is just want to give a shout out to all of our Patreon subscribers, which I'm pulling up a list. I got it. Thank you, Jeff W., Joe P., Vincent M., Isaac M., Sentinel D20, Star Shinobi, Adam A., and Home Bakery. All of you are awesome, and if you want to support the show by Patreon or one of our affiliates, you can go ahead on over to monstersofmulticlass.com/support, and you can get me to stop talking for $5 a month. I'll just shut up the whole next episode.
Do you really want to promise that?
Yeah, that'd be hilarious. You guys would have to carry
us. Is that offer on the table?
Yeah.
Are you ready to replace Jared? Will?
I've been thinking about it for a while.
You know, I see the waveforms on our audio. I know how much you talk compared to Jared. I don't think you're ready.
Put the team on my back. All right, let's end it. Say the words, Kevin.
All right. Thanks for watching.